It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, spirit. And our next speaker is a French artist with a very particular style.
It's based on photography.
Specifically, black and white portraits, which he massively enlarges and then pastes onto buildings.
Wrapping up, you know, squares, buildings, communities, village, and it's really like endless.
The art is anonymous.
I never sign my work.
And no one really knows what he looks like either.
I always hide myself in different ways, with sunglasses and hat.
Because some authorities might think he's defacing property. And anyway, he'd rather people pay attention to the art.
And so that's what I've been doing the last 22 years.
This is the artist J.R. Even if you've never heard of him, you have probably seen his work, like the huge photo of a Mexican toddler peering over the border wall into the U.S. Or the faces of Brazilian women plastered on the sides of homes, dotting a poor hillside neighborhood, looking out over Rio. Or more recently, the image of a smiling Ukrainian girl, nearly the width of a football field, paraded through the streets of Lviv, reminding anyone flying above that children live there.
I'm an artist, I'm not an activist, for the simple reason that I just raise questions. I go there, I learn from people, I create art with them. So when I do the little kid overlooking the wall between US and Mexico, I just actually show this little kid called Kikito, and just by seeing him overlooking the wall in this context, you know, people make their own interpretation. And that's what I find fascinating. Huh. I don't have a political message or agenda behind it.
When did you realize that sort of the theme you were sticking to was making people seen who are usually invisible? And there they are, larger than life.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I started this journey from the projects outside Paris.
JR grew up in these housing projects where many poor immigrants and their French-born children live. Young people from these projects are often vilified in the press.
I was doing graffiti, so, you know, it was not even called art at the time, it was called vandalism. It was more a way to write your name to say, I exist, I'm here.
He had never considered photography, but then one day, out with his friends, he spotted a camera left behind on a subway seat.
And I just started to take photos of my friend doing graffiti. And then I just had no money to print them, so I made photocopies of them. So I was just like giving them to my friends, and then I would just pasting them on the streets.
It was the mid-2000s. JR began enlarging these photocopies, pasting them everywhere, including in his own neighborhood. And one of these pictures ended up launching his career. It's a photo of a friend holding a video camera like it's a machine gun, pointed right at the viewer.
And I took this photo of him, and he looks really like, you know, like with a very strong look, and he holds his camera like a gun.
The message is clearly aimed at the public and the media. You see us as violent thugs, but you should turn the camera on yourselves and see what we see. JR had put up the photo in 2004, and a year later,
the riots actually exploded in 2005 in front of that photo. The largest riots that France had ever known since the French Revolution. That then spread all over France, started there, and my photos happened to be in the background of it.
That photo appeared in news reports all over the world.
November 2005. The streets are burning.
JR picks up the story from the TED stage.
Everyone was glued to the TV, watching disturbing, frightening images taken from the edge of the neighborhood. I mean, these kids without control, throwing Molotov cocktail, attacking the cops and the firemen, looting everything they could in the shops. These were criminals, thugs, dangerous. Destroying their own environment. And then I saw it. Could it be possible? My photo on a wall, revealed by a burning car, a pasting I've done a year earlier, an illegal one, still there. I mean, these were the faces of my friend, I know those guys. All of them are not angels, but they're not monsters either. It was kind of weird to see those images and those eyes stare back at me through the television. So I went back there with a 28mm lens. It was the only one I had at that time, but with that lens, you have to be as close as 10 each from the person. So you can do it only with their trust. So I took full portraits of people from Le Bosque. They were making scary faces to play the caricature of themselves. And then I pasted huge poster everywhere in the bourgeois area of Paris with their name, age, even building number of these guys. A year later, the exhibition was displayed in front of the City Hall of Paris. That's where I realized the power of paper and glue.
You spent the next two decades traveling to troubled places. And let's talk about a recent project you did in a prison in California. If listeners Google Tehachapi Prison, they will see a photo taken by a drone of an incredible mural. It's a group of inmates gathered in the prison yard looking up, and you see the faces of the people who live in this maximum security prison. JR, you got very rare access, and if I understand correctly, you picked this facility off a map?
Exactly. I sent two friends to scout one prison I had just scouted on Google Earth. And when they came back from it, they called me and they said, Jared, it's incredible. And I said, okay, come with me. We're going to paste the entire prison.
Like, look, Jared, that's a super max security prison. It's called Tehachapi. It's actually in the top five of the most violent prison. I was like, that will do it. The next day we flew there. We arrived there. And of course, you know, it's not that easy. You get there, it's like fences, electric fences, walls. And you add more walls and more people that check your IDs and... My God, I get all the way to the yard, and it looked like some army guy with like bulletproof jackets and heavily armed who say, all right, there's some people waiting for you in the gymnasium. We gather some inmates. You cannot approach them. You cannot touch them. You can sit at the chair that we designated for you, and we're going to surround the area of the gymnasium.
When I went there, they had actually gathered a group of maybe, you know, something like 40 inmates, and I sat at the table with all of them. And a lot of them were there since they were kids, between 13 and 20. Some of them had life without parole. A lot of them had life. Really, even the warden told me, he said, look, those guys, we don't even screen movies for them. We don't even do any art program. You know, they couldn't even imagine that a project like that could happen.
So what was the goal? Like, when you were thinking about it, was it to give voice to people who were incarcerated? Because you also did recordings with the inmates, too. Or, I don't know, or was it just to draw attention to the rate of incarceration in the U.S.? Like, what was your purpose going in?
At first, it always starts the same way, which is there's not a direct goal. I think the goal was to create a project with the people there. And let me tell you, there are some people that really need to be there, you know, and really deserve to be there and really don't have that same energy of that group that I had. So what happened actually is I explained them what I do. I said, well, you know, in the process of what we're about to do, if you want to do it, you'll record your story and you'll tell your story by yourself. But I just want you to know before you do that, that I won't be asking questions. You know, this is how you want to actually share your story.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them, when they did their audio, they spent like 30, 40 minutes in, you know, the room recording their story by themselves, sometimes crying because they never had in all those years a moment where they could actually share and explain with their own words.
Hello, outside world. My name's Richard.
My name is Carlos Cervantes.
My name's Ricky Black. I'm from Bakersfield, California.
I'm currently serving a 15 years to life sentence. I've been incarcerated since I was 22 years old. I'm 30 years old now. My birthday's on Wednesday.
Grew up, you know, in messed up environment. Always being evicted. I never really had a dream growing up. And
I remember, had, like it was yesterday, my dad and my little brother went to go visit me for the first time, shackled. Behind glass.
It's wild here. There's, when we do come out for yard, there's stuff happening all the time. People fight, people get stabbed, they get shot with the block guns, they throw smoke grenades.
You've pretty much lose touch with reality. And I spent many years back there never thinking I would have an opportunity like this to present myself in a humane manner.
I work in the library. I'm the library's clerk. I'm the college clerk.
Got my paralegal certificate. I'm a certified paralegal. I'm going to college. Who would have thought I would be in college?
I'm hoping that people will see this and know that a lot of us deserve another chance, a second chance.
Like right now, we have a great opportunity to change the narrative of who we are, change the way they treat us. Because as many people know, being in prison is really inhumane.
I am human. I do have feelings, and I still know that people care about me out there. Denise and Marissa, who I love dearly, hope you guys see this.
My daughter needs me right now, and I want her to see this. I want her to click on my picture and see me, because I've been gone her whole life. She's 8 years old. And that I love her. She knows I love her. I'll be home soon, sweetie. I'll be home soon.
These stories, I mean, they feel so intimate. And each of the prisoners did their own recording. But you pasted the massive mural down in the prison yard together, right? And that's a whole big thing. Your process is complicated.
Exactly. I told them I'm going to come back and we're going to paste this. And I'm actually going to do that within the next 10 days because I want to see if they will really let us come with like giant strips of papers, glue, scissors. I mean, all those tools you need to paste, you know, in a maximum security prison. Then I went back to my studio, and that's what we do. We print strips of paper like a giant puzzle, so we have to combine it together. And then we went back there, and we started bringing everybody on the yard. And we started pasting. Everyone from every gang, every race participated. So I said, wait, stop, give me a second. I'm going to try to get some guards to paste with us. And they were like, look, you know, we love your utopism and stuff, but like, that's where it stopped. I'm like, no, just give me a second. So I start going to the guards and I say, hey, do you mind participating? No. 50 no. One guy say yes. I say, cool. Come with me. They're going to show you. And then another guard and another guard. And that's where the real walls were falling down because there's no communication between those guards and the inmates. And you know what? From the floor, it was so big, we couldn't see it anyway. You had to send a drone. So we're sending the drone. Those guys have never seen a drone their whole life. They were more excited about the drone than the whole project. And I was so scared because I was like, I hope we did the puzzle right because if not, it's going to look a bit ugly from up there. And that's what you see from up there. That's what you see from up there. Thank you.
I mean, you can hear the audience gasping when you show them the mural there. It really packs a punch. But your story about trying to cajole the guards to take part, I mean, you only got a few to join in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those prisons, they are made to dehumanize people, you know, so you can't talk with the guards, you have to keep at safe distance. The guards are not in the yard, they're only from towers, then they move the inmates, you know, so when there's a fight, they will actually ask everyone to get on the ground. Then who is not on the ground, they will shoot at with rubber bullet. And so everything is made. So even if you change, no one will notice it. You're still like stuck in that system. So what that project actually create is during that day of trying to paste a giant collage of pieces of puzzle to create the image, the guards and the inmates had to talk to say, hey, can you pass me the glue? Oh, wait, there's no more water. Let me get the water. No, don't worry, I get it. Oh, you're so kind. Ta-da. Little things. But those little things actually reveal the humanity of each other, because then suddenly when they would talk or when they'll take a little 5-minute break and then they'll exchange, you know, oh, you know, what a beautiful day today. Oh, yeah, the winter last time was hard. And oh, yeah, where do you live? Oh, you live close by from here. Yeah, yeah, I live.
Normal chit chat.
Exactly. Well, that chit chat right there is game changer, because when that project's over, everything goes back to normal. Well, those guards will never see those inmates the same way, and the inmates will never see those guards the same way. And what happened, which I could never believe it in a lifetime, they've asked the guards to vouch for them if they would go to board parole again. And it's incredible to think that just a little piece of paper and a community action can have such an impact. So I got a permit to go back in the prison. And this time I say, let me walk on some more walls. I'll find an idea. Let me get back in. So I go back in there and I started walking on the walls, but it was really the excuse was like, I need to speak to you guys. So I said, what happened, guys? They were like, well, what do you mean, what happened? I was like, well, I was in the outside. I can't speak to you guys. What was the impact inside? It's like, oh, the impact inside is pretty simple. I mean, my daughter never visited me in 14 years. And now she sat in her bedroom and she listened to my audio. And now she sees me every week. He said, you can ask to every one of those guys here and they'll tell you the same story. That's what's important. And after this whole project, after everything I showed you, what shook them, what struck them the most is that I shook their hand. So at the end, they even asked me for a hug. Now, I remember their first question, which was, what is the purpose of your art? Well, art can change things, but can it change the world? Or can it change a man? Before you answer that question, think, at some point in your life, have you changed? And if yes, if you did, why can't they?
You know, I'm a Gen X cynic, and so part of me worries that, but you don't do this. Like, part of me thinks like, oh, prisoners do an art project. Prisoners have a heart of gold. Prisoners are, you know, reform. They're actually really good guys. You know what I mean? But there's something about your approach that doesn't make me feel cynical. And I'm trying to put my finger on what it is.
You know, I have to say those guys had hope, even if they had no hope of leaving that prison one day. But they still have hope, and it was incredible because then we could imagine crazy things, you know, and we did. It's something that even in my wildest dream I couldn't have imagined.
I always told myself that if I didn't change or grow or mature or do everything I could to better myself, I was still making things worse.
I gotta still push forward because that's what, like, defines me.
People in prison are human beings who have the ability to learn, to grow, to change, and they deserve that opportunity.
That's about it. That's all I wanted to share.
And I thank you all for the appreciation, for the time, and just take it easy and God bless.
Those were some of the voices of current and former inmates at Tehachapi State Prison. JR is an artist and the winner of the 2011 TED Prize. You can see all of his talks at TED.com. On the show today, part 3 of our series, Mind, Body, Spirit. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.